Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. My name is Jen, and I'm pleased to be joined this evening by two very long-time participants in the Sangha, June and Carolyn, who have agreed to be with us tonight to talk about a very fun fundraiser that they are planning as part of the participation game that we're doing for the work in Africa right now. Welcome, June.
Hi, Jen.
And welcome, Carolyn.
Hi.
Hey. So, June, I wonder if you might just start by walking us through the details of what is this fundraiser you guys have up your sleeve?
Carolyn and I are both golfers, and it's just kind of a passion for both of us.
Uh-huh.
And
this is a bit of an understatement in itself, isn't it? you're both very, very, very good golfers. Yeah.
And so one day in September, I think it's the 19th. I can't remember, Carolyn. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah.
Carolyn and I are going to get together down in the Bay Area, and we're going to play golf from early morning till late evening. We're going to play as many holes as we can. And what we're doing is getting people to sponsor us per hole. For instance, I have several people who will donate to Living Compassion $1 for every hole I play that day. And so Carolyn is getting her friends and acquaintances and the people that she who owe her big time.
you're both cashing in all your favors.
Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. So she and I are going to have so much fun, and I think we might raise a little money to boot.
I love it. So being a total golf rookie myself, so normally one would play 18 holes, right?
Yeah, that would be about standard, yeah.
Okay. And so what can you reasonably expect from early morning till late night? To how many holes could you reasonably expect to play?
Oh, I don't know, 19 or 20?
No, I'm kidding.
I think we're going to, you know, it's a public course, and there's a little bit of an access issue. But okay. I think we'll shoot for maybe 54 holes.
That sounds about right,
Carolyn.
Yeah. Yeah. I told everyone to count on somewhere between 36 and 54 holes.
Yeah.
And like June said, you know, because it's public, we might be held up by other folks on the course. But, you know, that's our intention, is to play as many holes as we can.
Uh-huh. So what do you do, Carolyn? You just finish the course and then just go back to the beginning and start again?
That's it. Yeah,
uh-huh.
Yeah. It's like, you know, you take another spin around on the carousel.
I really hope next year, as you're talking, I hope you're going to have a rookie's golf day where you'll take all of us who have never hit the golf ball out with you, because that could be really fun and raise a lot of money. People would love to see that, I'm sure. That's fun.
That's a wonderful idea. You remind me. We'll do it.
Okay, I would love to. Say it again.
Let's do it.
Yeah, I think it'd be really, really fun. It could be a fundraiser in itself, right? You pay to go learn golf from the two of the best golf players, probably the best golf players in the Sangha. It's really fun. So, Carolyn, I wonder if you could say a word or two about what motivated you guys to do it.
Well, June did it last year, and I sponsored her, and I was so excited because I love playing too, and I said, gosh, next year, please include me. You know, I'd love to be a part of it, and she did. She called me this year and invited me to participate. So, yeah, I'm just thrilled.
So it kind of combines your passion for golf with, I'm projecting, your desire to participate with Sangha.
Yeah, which is a big, huge thing for me. And because, And it's funny because what's coming up for me right now is the Enneagram class. And
uh-huh.
I'm a five. And, uh-huh. you know, part of my strategy is to, you know, be detached, to uh-huh. observe, uh-huh. Not to participate, you know, to uh-huh. to kind of stand apart from. And uh-huh. and even, you know, a survival strategy is sort of to not ask for much and then not expect people to ask much of me in return.
Mm-hmm.
And this just blows all of that completely out of the water.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, go ahead. Yeah, it sounds like going straight up against, it's really combining all of what we do in practice. So
yeah.
we're looking at what is it that keeps me as a particular, you know, in this case, Enneagram type, in suffering? You know, how
yeah.
does egocentric karma conditioning cause me to suffer? And then going straight at that and doing the opposite.
Yes. And the other thing that I do is I compartmentalize. So I have my golf friends. I have my other
uh-huh.
friends. I have the Sangha. I have all these sort of compartmentalized relationships.
Yeah.
And this is bringing all of them together.
Yeah.
People who didn't know I play golf now know I play golf.
Yeah.
People,
yeah.
you know, people who knew nothing about the Sangha are now, you know, finding out that I've got this whole other rich, you know, part of my life that I haven't shared with them. So it's really forcing me to bring everything together.
Yes. Yeah, and it blows right through one of ego's biggest tools that it holds against us is this is who I am and this is who I'm not. And as you say, kind of compartmentalizing us into these small little identities. We can have
yeah.
be this way, we can't be that way. And to just go right at that and go for it.
Yeah. And the reward is I get to do something I love doing with someone I love. And
yeah.
it's like, and for something I really love and believe in.
Yes.
So
yeah.
it's wow.
Yeah.
What could be better?
Yeah, yeah. So, June, I wonder, same kind of question for you. What would you say for you, kind of had you motivated to, it sounds like started it last year and doing it again this year?
Well, let's see. Everything that is ever written in the blogs, the Africa blogs, wishing I could do more, wishing when we hear about somebody's having a hard time or somebody needs something, wishing I could just say, here's the money, make it, you know, fix it.
Yeah. Yep.
And I know in two ways that's not possible. I don't have that much money, and it's not exactly the process that we're participating in there. We're making
yeah.
them self-sufficient, but you know, I've still yet to go to Zambia. Mm-hmm. It might happen, it might not. But I feel like I know those people, and if, you know, that's why I'm combining something that I would do. I mean, I would
yeah.
I pay other people to let me play golf. so getting people to pay me to play golf is just the best.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so great, June. And, you know, I've been looking so much recently at how what we do in Africa is exactly what we do here. The process of it is the same. And what I saw in what you just said is that in the same way that it isn't the process, you know, we don't just write checks and say, okay, here, good, do this. Okay, yeah, you know, dig a well. Okay, yeah, you know, it's a participation process
yeah.
that we're doing with them to create the sustainability. And in the same way here, what I just heard and what you said is even if you did have enough money to just write all those checks, it wouldn't be the same thing as having this golf fundraiser. It's just a completely different process.
Yeah.
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 And
yeah.
we're inviting other folks to participate as well. So
yes.
it's not just me and Junie, it's all of the people who are supporting us. They're part of our team. And
yeah.
I've told folks is that I'm going to wear a shirt that's imprinted with everyone's name who is sponsoring me.
Oh,
so
very cool.
I'll play wrapped in all of my support.
Oh, I love it. So is there a way that folks can sponsor you guys if they're listening to the show and they feel moved to participate?
Absolutely. What should it be, Jen? Email to Monastery?
Well, what just came to me is it could be, I'm thinking, as simple as making a donation to Africa and putting Golf Fundraiser or June and Carolyn or something in the notes field.
There you go. That would work.
Yeah.
Because most people sponsor me hole by hole, and then after we play, I'll go collect the money. But some people just give a flat amount.
Yeah, in fact, one of my sponsors said she'd double the rate per hole if I got a birdie.
Oh,
wow. Carolyn, I'm going to make sure you get a birdie. I'm going to coach you into a birdie girl.
Oh,
all right. Excellent. And I'll tell you what, we'll make a commitment that we'll announce on the show. So if anyone wants to sort of write their own commitment down, okay, I'm going to sponsor them X number of holes, and we'll make an announcement after you guys have done the fundraiser, how many holes you did, and then people can send in their checks or, you know, go online and do their donations.
That would be so fun.
All right. Cool.
Bye.
Well, thank you, gals, for being on.
Thank you.
Very fun.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Good night.
Bye.
All right, Michael, over to you.
Great. Thank you, Jen. And thank you, June and Carolyn. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
You've been practicing your swing?
Well, it does make me want to go play golf, I have to say. But, you know, the thing that struck me so much about that, and it's kind of what the direction that Jen keeps nudging us in, is hearing people have all of their passions come together in one place.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, both those gals do love their golf, and they love practice, and they love the project in Cantalamba. And so coming up with a way to put all of that together, that's very fun, very inspiring.
Yes.
Because I would imagine with a little contemplation, each one of us could come up with a way that we could do that same thing, turn our attention to all of our passions and how they could go together to accomplish something wonderful, as Carolyn and June are doing.
Yes.
I'm going to think about that.
Great. Sounds like fun. Gary, I have some announcements here.
Hey.
This weekend, I believe it is, August 12th through 14th, you'll be leading a weekend workshop at Esalen in Big Sur entitled, What Do These Questions Have in Common? And then next week, August 17th through 24th, Wednesday to Wednesday, What You Practice is What You Have, a special retreat with you, Sherry, for participants in any of the email classes entitled, It's Time to Feel Good.
Mm.
And that's at the Monastery in Murphy's.
Mm.
And then, week-long, August 27th through September 3rd, the extraordinary There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat at the Zen Monastery Peace Center in Murphy's. To be followed soon after, the following Wednesday, September 7th through 14th, the extraordinary There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat at the Zen Monastery Peace Center in Murphy's.
For those who didn't get into that first one.
Yes. And then, on Saturday, October 1st, the 10th Annual Golden Gate Bridge Walk.
So much fun.
And I'd like to remind our callers to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. Okay, let's get started.
Thank you, Michael.
Sure. First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Michael. Hi, Sherry. It's Anna from England here.
Well, hello.
Hello. Hi. How are you?
Good. And yourself?
Yeah, I'm very good. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah. excuse me. I'm ringing because I'm doing the email class.
Oh.
And I'm really enjoying it. So I had never heard of the Enneagram before or any of that work, and I'm really enjoying it. So I took the online test before the class started, and I've been doing the assignments, and it's absolutely amazing. And I keep talking about it all day long to anybody that will listen.
And so have you got your number?
Yes, I've got my number. So it's number 9, and it was really quick, really. I found it quite easy to see. Really, you know, it was almost straight away. There were a few others that I could see that I had aspects of as well. But the more I read about it, the more it was like, it's incredible because I just keep getting flashbacks of my life and seeing it through the number 9.
Uh-huh. Yes.
It's amazing.
It is, isn't it? It's extraordinary. It's like there are only 9 of us. And people can get kind of upset about that and a little offended at the notion.
Yeah.
And then we start reading about our type and go, yeah, I guess so. Because that's me. Those are the things I say. Those are the thoughts in my head. That's how self-hate attacks me. Yep, that's it.
Yeah. It's been, and the other thing is as well is that, so not everybody sees it like that.
Uh-huh.
That's been the really interesting thing. And so I started sort of thinking about people that I know, say like my husband, and then say Poppy, who's been getting really interested in it as well. And so it's like, oh my God, wow.
Yeah.
What was a really interesting one for me when I was looking at mine was when, because I can't quite remember, but some of them are anger-based and some are fear-based. I can't remember what the other ones were. It was something like that. And it said that 9s were anger-based. And that really threw me because I was thinking, I would have thought it would have been a fear-based one. And then I was living with it for a few weeks anyway. And then I realized that it is anger-based. And I could remember all sorts of episodes when I was very young of being very angry and expressing it. And then I could remember being angry as a teenager and not expressing it completely.
Yes.
And just that's what I do now, and I'm so used to it. And there was a really great response that you did to somebody who was a 9, and you said something like, if you ask an angry 9 if they're angry, they'll say no. And I'm like, it's fantastic. Thank you for doing it. It is going to be life transforming, which is, you know, your motto, of course. So I'm really, really enjoying it. And after the email class is finished, I will definitely continue with it.
Yeah, continue to look at it. Couple of things about it. I was actually just talking with June before the show, what'll be coming out to you shortly is exactly what you were just talking about. The different triads, the fear-based, anger-based, and the image triad, and what that means, you know, how that shows up in the different enneatypes. Excuse me, because it is often hard for 9s to see that anger is such a big issue for them. You know, the 8s, the 1s, you know, more expressive of those emotions. So it's extremely helpful. And there was one other thing. The point to me is that ties it in with awareness practice is that this is where I go with it anyway, that these are the traits of my Enneatype. This is what I'm working to go beyond.
Yes.
To accept it and go beyond it rather than staying in that place. In fact, Carolyn and June, one of them alluded to the, you know, this is the type that I am. And if we're not paying attention, if we're not careful, that can just define us for a lifetime.
Yeah.
I think it was Carolyn talking about it because of bringing the various aspects of life together. And so if I realize these are my karmic tendencies as this Enneatype, then when that comes up, it's a flag to me that this is not true or real. It's life as viewed through a particular Enneatype.
That's it precisely. That's what I'm so happy about.
Instead of just
it's so clear.
Yeah, instead of just kind of staying stuck in it and, that's just too bad, but that's just how I am, we can say, and then I can also start finding the other eight types and how they show up in me, because I'm not just that one type.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very unifying.
Yeah.
Good.
So that's it, really. It was just to sort of let you know that I'm doing it and having great fun.
Oh, I'm so glad.
I wanted to phone you tonight. So, but Poppy's very well, and she's participated by sponsoring. I think she looks to be a teenage girl. I know that she wanted to sponsor someone that is sort of as near to her age as possible. So she's been enjoying that.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
So you might think about sliding south at some point and joining us there.
I know. And she needs to ring you as well, but I was a bit pushy. I was practicing knowing what my feelings were.
Uh-huh.
I'm putting my son and not taking on anybody else's. And I said, no, I'm ringing tonight. So.
Good. Good.
Yeah.
I'm glad.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you again, and I'm going to continue to enjoy that, and I'll be in touch next time.
That's wonderful. Great to hear from you.
And you too.
All right. Good night.
Okay. Good night. Thank you. And thank you, Michael. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Anna. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And we have another caller, Sherry.
Excellent.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Oh.
Hello.
Hi, this is Andrea calling.
How are you?
Hi.
How are you?
Oh, I'm doing okay. Well, sorry, I just didn't hear you.
Oh, that's okay. I could tell you didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, well, what I've been looking at is, it seems like it's been a long time since I called.
Well, that's why I said, how are you?
Yeah,
I know. It has been a long time.
I know. I'm so glad to connect. What I'm looking at is anger, and what's going on is my son seems to have a very explosive personality. He can be very, very sweet and great most of the time, but he can get really, really angry and do things like hit other kids. He's 5 now. He'll be starting kindergarten. And, you know, pinch them and do things that are not acceptable.
Uh-huh.
And what I try to do is give him boundaries and give him timeouts in his room, and even that's a huge struggle because I literally have to stand and hold the door shut while he's having a timeout because he's so strong-willed and gets so angry.
Wow.
Yeah.
And is he verbal about it at all?
Oh, he's very verbal. I try to talk to him about Buddhism, and saying, you know, what are the voices saying right now? What's your brain saying? And he's even said things to me like, you know, my brain isn't wise. You know, after an outburst, he'll say, you know, that wasn't wise. And, you know, like he knows that he doesn't want to behave that way. Yet he can't seem to, when he really gets into it, he can't disidentify from it.
Uh-huh. From the feelings, from the sensations in his body.
Yes, yes.
And does he have alternative activities to do with those sensations in his body besides pull on a door handle?
Well, that's what I'm wondering. I'm trying to come up with something else because I feel like I read this book, which seemed to be pretty good about, you know, boundaries, but I feel like I need to try some other things for him, and I'm not really sure what to do. And the other thing is he seems to have some issues in relating to other kids socially, especially boys who are a little older than him. Like he can play pretty well, very well with this girl who lives next door, but he gets very aggressive with them and kind of tries to joke around with them and kind of, you know, just kind of teases them, and they don't like it, and he can't seem to get that it's inappropriate. And so that's what I'm kind of looking at, those two behaviors that he's doing.
Yeah. And so what happens with you around this?
Well, there's this worrier who comes in, and then what happened yesterday was he got really angry because he didn't have this toy. He left it at his friend's house. And then I got really angry, and I totally lost it. And so I saw the exact same process that happens to him go on with me.
Ah. Very helpful, huh?
Yes. Yes. So right now I'm trying to kind of initiate. I'm thinking maybe we should go to a family counselor or something. I really don't know what else to do.
Well, what did you need when you were in that place?
Well, we both got angry about the same thing. We seem to get angry about when we can't find something. We get really angry. And once I found it, I calmed down. But what if I hadn't found it?
Well, now this seems to me to be quite manageable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're 5 years old, well, at any age, to
yeah.
me, using the head to deal with what's going on in the body
mm-hmm.
is just not helpful.
mm-hmm.
Okay, because what is the head going to do besides tell you that it's inappropriate and you shouldn't do it and why are you feeling that way anyway? And there are just so many alternatives
mm-hmm.
that are a lot more fun and effective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I know what they are.
Well, there are a number. It sounds like you two were at home when that particular one happened.
Yes.
You can dance.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You can dance. You can dance the emotion.
Mm-hmm.
You can jump up and down and scream and yell the emotion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay? You can do all of that until it becomes funny, and then you can laugh your way through it.
Mm.
What you don't need to do is believe it and take it seriously.
Yeah, and we both believe it. And I even tried to do things like say, okay, let's try to take a deep breath. And,
nah,
you know,
it's all doing the same. It's trying to manipulate what's going on in order
yeah.
to be socially acceptable, which
yeah.
you do need to do. But you don't need to do it when you don't need to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you know that old Zen story about the teacher's favorite student dies? So,
I don't think so.
So fast forward, you know, they're at the funeral and the teacher is starting to cry, and then the teacher is starting to sob, and then the teacher is starting to wail, and all of the other students are getting really nervous because this is really not a spiritual teacher approach to this sort of thing. Equanimity is the expected behavior.
Exactly.
And so finally one of the monks comes up and says, Master, this this doesn't look good. And the teacher said, if I can't cry at the funeral of my favorite student, when can I cry? So to let conditioning take spiritual practice and use it as an excuse to become an even more repressed, perfectly socially conditioned human being really misses the point. So if you can have the feelings that you have, if you can really have them, you can get into, at least this is my experience, you can get into a different relationship with them. But if emotions are under the control of egocentric karmic conditioning and self-hate, then it's just not going to lead to a happy place.
Yeah.
So to be able to express it, you know, where does that, I mean, what's going on? What is inherently upsetting about not being able to find something? That would be fascinating to explore.
Yeah, since we both seem to have the exact same process.
Yeah. So if you can, if you can get to the bottom of that, and you're going to get to the bottom of it by being with the experience, not by trying to avoid the experience. If you can get to the bottom of that, it'll be really illuminating, and there'll be a whole level of freedom around it, in addition to which it reinforces the awareness that being present to something is a far more effective way of getting through it than is resisting it. And so what we don't want for him is to go through life turning his life over to conditioned mind to make sure that he always reacts the way he should react. That's such a fast track to depression.
I know, and I think he's probably an 8, speaking of Enneagram types.
Great. Buckle your seatbelt.
Yeah, because he is not a run of the mill kid, and he has very strong opinions.
Well, I'll tell you this. Yeah, if he is an 8, I can guarantee you one thing. Coming up with ways to control his behavior is not ever going to be popular.
Mm.
So to assist him in ways that he can work with what goes on with him, yes.
Yeah.
But trying to manipulate him?
Yeah.
No.
No, and I don't want to do it. I just don't know what to do if he, say, hits another kid or something like that. You know?
Well, you know, first of all, society is set up to help him work out those issues, right? If primarily, as you're describing, he's doing this with older kids, he's going to find out before long that other people hit too, and often harder.
Yeah.
So he'll probably work through that sort of thing on his own. But assisting him in getting to what's going on with him is going to be the secret to your success, as it is the secret to your success with you.
Yeah.
Not going up into conditioned mind to figure out how you should be, but what is actually going on here. Because when we see that, when there's awareness, we're free. Mm-hmm. We don't have to control ourselves. We don't have to figure out the right way to be. We don't have to restrain ourselves and have boundaries. And what we want to do is get to the present. And those kinds of behaviors are reactions against, and they're the very things that take us out of the present. So let mom be the role model for, well, what in the heck is going on here? Let's get to the bottom of this so that we can be free of it. not allow it to go on, worry about it, fret over it, become anxious, despair over it. That's not the path we want him to travel.
No, not at all. Not at all. What I tried to do is say, you know, what's going on? What are you hearing right now? What is your brain saying? I try to do that with him.
How do you feel?
That's a better way. You're right. See, I'm going into the analytical subpersonality.
Precisely. And you know, you don't want to put him on a slide.
Yeah.
And start cranking down that microscope. Let him learn to explore for himself. But again, the point is you, not him.
Well, you know, this must be a real, maybe I'm finally ready to look at this, because right now I just feel completely clueless.
Well, listen to our conversation as soon as it's available, and I think you'll get some big clues.
Yeah.
You know, you're falling for a trap that just about all parents fall for, and that is get focused on the child as if the issue is the child's issue.
Yeah.
And what we need to do is bring the focus of attention back to ourselves.
Oh, I do. And I think it's definitely an issue that Johan and I both share. I don't think it's just his issue at all.
No. And so you are far more likely to be able to get to the bottom of it and to resolve it on a process level than he is. But if nobody is doing that, it's very unlikely that at age 5 it's going to occur to him.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, Sherry. Well, I appreciate it, and I will listen to it, and well, maybe call back.
Good. Do.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll take the next step.
Yeah. Yeah.
Excellent.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Good night.
Okay. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Andrea. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
Good. Porchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
By Trish Brooks for Culligan gives voice to what Simply Celebrate is all about. Opening to rivers of joy, listening to our hearts, trusting ourselves and our lives. Simply Celebrate is a book and business that grew out of gratitude for the work of Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha. We use the practice as a foundation for helping people wake up to all the joy, spontaneity, color, and connection that is available in every moment. Please visit simplycelebrate.net. Once you bathe in an ocean of roses, once you swam in a river of joy.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have another caller, Sherry.
Perfect.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, good evening, Sherry. Good evening, Michael. I'm Omar. I'm Italian, calling from Switzerland.
Yes, I remember. How are you?
You remember me from last time for sure. Well, let's say I'm a little better than a week ago.
Good.
Which is not bad. I'm taking baby steps through what should my mentality be? What should my my way of being be and everything. I wanted to thank you for letting me participate on the Zen class. It's really nice. It's very much fun. It's a lot of fun. I'm learning a lot of things that I had no idea that they would be available for me to learn. And I almost had the kind of a breakthrough moment after seeing what kind of Enneagram type I am, seeing that I'm a tie between 8 and 2, and I'll do more tests to see if that's accurate, or to really check out if it's accurate. But I really seem to be an 8 if I'm not... of course I'm not depressed or have any issues that or the issues that I'm dealing with right now.
Well, we're going to get into this more later in the class, but for you to consider that if you're an Enneatype 8, then when you're feeling comfortable and relaxed and safe and secure and all of those kinds of things, you will go to the healthy side of 2.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be very likely that you would test high in both of those depending on sort of where you are at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So on the other side of it, when you get stressed and stressed, you'll go to the
I understand.
Yeah, you'll go to the unhealthy side of 5, which you want to crawl into a hole and, as my mother used to say, pull the hole in after you. So you want to disappear and
exactly.
hide out and, yeah, sit in a dark room and never come out.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So good. Well, I'm glad. I'm glad it's shining some lights on things for you.
Yeah, I also ordered all your books. I hope I will receive them shortly. I ordered What Your Practice Is, What You Have. I am trying to do the record and listening.
Uh-huh.
Even if it's not that easy for me, but I'm trying my best. There is a page on Living Compassion that in which you say that the first recording should be a love letter to yourself.
Yes.
And maybe I should do that. Then
yes.
I should record everything that I want to have in my mind, and instead of my obsessions and my negative thoughts that are still the voices in my head are still killing me. They're still taking my life a living hell, but it's less of a hell now with your wonderful tips.
So
and,
I can't remember actually if I gave you this tip, but it's a tip worth hearing more than once. So
sure.
With the recordings, no negative, no obsessing, none of that gets on there. Okay.
Okay. Sure.
The
yeah.
only thing that gets on there is how you want your life to be, what you love, what's beautiful, what you choose for your life. Those are the only things that you want on there. So yes, you start out with the love letter, and then you go on to you know, what's important to you. You talk to yourself about joy. You talk to yourself about peace, about kindness,
mm-hmm.
all
mm-hmm.
of the kindnesses that you've ever received, that you've ever done. You're
mm-hmm.
everything that you admire and respect in the world. I mean, go on and on and on, and
sure.
and listen to that nonstop.
I will.
Yeah.
I will. That's for sure. I wanted to say something now I'm forgetting. Just give me a second. I still have problems though with having the strength, mostly the physical strength, to have a good exercise, to have a good workout, every day. Or I had a decent workout today. I ran through the woods for about a kilometer or two,
okay.
At a good pace.
May I?
Sure, please.
So here, I don't think probably at this point that you need a good workout. What would be helpful is to walk.
Mm-hmm.
And to walk as long as you possibly can. So however much time you have in your day, spend
mm-hmm.
as much of it as possible walking. Now,
mm-hmm.
if after you've walked, you get to the point where you feel like, I'd like to jog a little, then
mm-hmm.
jog a little. But the main thing is to walk, and to walk completely. So by that I mean being absolutely in your body, allowing your awareness to be with your body. You feel your legs move. You feel your arms move. You feel your chest and your belly as you breathe. You're
mm-hmm.
standing up straight. You're dropping the tension out of your shoulders. And
mm-hmm.
you're just letting your body be loose and relaxed and let it move.
Hello?
Yeah.
Ah, okay. And let it go. Yeah, sure.
Okay. So much more important for you at this point than working out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How about meditation too? How should I do it?
My encouragement with everybody in terms of meditation is this. All you're required to do is notice. Above all, don't allow any voices of standards.
Mm-hmm.
So you simply sit down in a comfortable place, and you you sit up straight, so let your spine be straight, sit in a relaxed posture, and just sit there and notice. You're not figuring anything out. You're not getting anywhere. You're not having a good meditation. You're not anything but sitting there
mm-hmm.
with your awareness and your attention on your body, on your breath, noticing everything that arises. Sit there
I
for
see.
5 minutes to begin with, get up to 10, and then we'll talk.
Okay.
You
sure.
You can do that as many times during the day as you want to.
Uh-huh.
But no, you know, no lotus position, no, you know, no standards.
Sure. I also have a major problem that, you know, I wouldn't, maybe I shouldn't talk to you about it, but I think it's okay. I developed since I had online classes for college, and the online classes were U.S. based. I messed up my sleep cycle, in which I basically sleep during the day and I'm awake during the night, which is
terrible habit.
Awful.
Yeah. Yeah. So just very gently, compassionately, kindly change it. And what I mean by that is you go to bed at a reasonable time, you know, whatever it is for you, 10, 11 o'clock at night, you go to bed. And if you
mm-hmm.
can't sleep, you lie there and you meditate. In other words, you lie there and you just notice everything that's going on. You practice relaxing and being present, and
uh-huh.
you stay there. Eventually,
yes.
you fall asleep. If you don't, then at whatever time in the morning is time to wake up, 6 or 7, whatever that is for you, you get up.
Uh-huh.
And
okay.
you just simply do that, even though the voices, I mean, it will be such an awareness retreat, right? The voices are going to be screaming and yelling and threatening and whining and crying. And, you just go to bed when it's time to go to bed, and you get up when it's time to get up.
All right. All
yeah.
right.
Yeah, good. And
for sure.
one of the things when you're lying there, listening to that tape that you've made, that recording of all of the good things in your life, can be very, very soothing and relaxing for the system.
Sure.
All right.
Sure.
Now we probably better go before Michael rings a bell and pulls the plug on us.
All right. Sure.
Keep in
sure,
touch
sure.
with me and let me know how all this is going, and we'll just keep taking steps.
All right. Thank you very much,
and
Sherry.
Omar, the thing is, now you have to go to bed, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Because where you live, it's nighttime.
I'm sleeping now. Thank you very much, Sherry.
You're very welcome.
I love you, Gesho.
Gotcha. Take care.
And thank you.
Okay. Good night.
Thank you, Michael. Good night.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Omar. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have another caller here.
That's good.
Yes, it is. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Carrie in Colorado. I'm officially a second-time caller now.
Woohoo!
Last time
counting.
I called, I was just a few days away from going off to the There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat, and I heard Michael give dates for a couple that are coming up, and I just can't say enough about the extraordinary There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat. So if anybody out there is just even toying with the idea and has never gone, it is absolutely one of the best things I've ever done for myself. So
wonderful. And it is well-named, isn't it? The extraordinary There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat.
Yes, I love that we've tacked that adjective onto it. In fact, I've been listening to archives recently, and a few people from my particular retreat have called in, and it's just such a thrill when they do so. So you know, if anybody else out there from that retreat is listening and has been thinking of calling in, I can encourage them to do that as well.
Yes. Because the thing that we're all up against, as you've, I'm sure, noticed and know from your own life, we have this pull to wake up and end suffering,
mm-hmm.
and the voices of karmic conditioning and self-hate launch a campaign to try to keep us in suffering. we take a step out there, we do something. I mean, that's coming to a There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat is a huge step. And then what karmic conditioning wants to do is just pull us right back down into a world of suffering. And the only way that I know of to avoid that is to continue to practice. And the only way we can do that is to stay connected with Sangha.
Yes, amen to that. I was thinking, I when I called before, I wasn't really sure how long I had been involved with practice, but I'm in the current email class, and somebody happened to mention that the previous Enneagram email class was in 2003, and I did that one, and it certainly was not my first one. So it's longer than I really realized. That I was very lucky, I think, to have so much practice under my belt before the retreat, even though it took me a long time to get there. I think I've had extra incentive, it's felt like, you know, afterwards to just really, you know, practice like my hair's on fire, because I've heard people talk about the backlash and you know, things that happen afterwards. And and it's been pretty good. In fact, I mean, I'm already planning, like, I've got to get back to the monastery. I've got to go back to another retreat. It doesn't look like it'll happen this year, but by gosh, it'll happen next year. But I have to laugh because, you know, doing the Enneagram class, I've done it before. And so I've done the test twice. And it was so funny to see my type come up so easily again this time, which was a 6. And I thought, oh, no, really? You know, I thought it would be a little more hidden now, you know, with all this practice I've been doing.
I'm still me.
Oh, for Pete's sake. But, you know, I was thinking of an experience when I was very lucky, actually, with this retreat. My husband had a conference in San Francisco that tends to move around during the summer, and it happened to be the exact same week of the retreat.
Wow.
So we were able to travel out together, and he could show me how the, you know, the rapid transit worked. And so I happened to get there pretty early, and I remember standing in this hotel room. It was his hotel room for the week, and this voice in my head saying, you know, we could just stay here for the week.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you didn't turn around at the airport. You didn't do this. You didn't do that. Well, you know, you're still not on that train, and you're still not heading out there, so I can still
still get out of this.
There's still the scary thing. You know, and that's something that I came to today with today's assignment, was that, you know, I don't feel as fearful as I once was, but I do notice just this idea of safety being held out there for me, and it really has no solid definition. You know, it's just, oh, it'd be safer to stay here. And I'm like, well, what is that? What is safe?
Oh.
And it's a very slippery, it can change, and it's impossible. The criteria for safe are impossible. I could never meet them. And then they change.
Yes. Yes, that is such a such an important awareness, I think, for all of us, that our lives are run by these statements or these kind of unexamined beliefs and assumptions, and when we stop and ask for a definition, we realize that, wow, I don't have any idea what that means.
Yes.
So I'll be safer if, really? What does that even mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's powerful.
It was a bit of an eye-opener, really. You know, just I think safe has been left out there as this vague idea of feeling okay, just feeling okay. You know, but feeling okay comes with all these criteria. Everybody must be happy with me. Including the voices of self-hate. So you know I'm never going to win that one. I can be hearing nothing bad. And the thing that I've been noticing that self-hate really has me with recently, which is why I really wanted to call, is the judging of others in my head that it does. And it just seems like that's a particularly special area for it where, you know, okay, maybe I'm doing okay with my own, the criticism of me and catching on to it, but if it can kind of wheedle into, you know, criticizing other people, judging other people, and then, of course, that just means that I'm a judgmental person. I'm impatient. It comes back to me. It's a double whammy.
Yes. Yes.
And yet, it's definitely one of the toughest ones that I wrestle with.
Go ahead. Did you get the little rap about projection and judgment and how to use that for yourself instead of allowing the voices to use it against you? You might have missed that one?
Feel okay. free to elaborate.
Okay, I'm happy. It's one of my favorite
Thank you.
Parts. So we're not supposed to judge. And, I mean, we that's religion, that's society, that's everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're not supposed to judge. But, of course we judge. We have to judge. Everything in our lives requires us to judge if we're going to survive, right? So you've got to know where you are and how you stack up against everyone and everything else so that you can be safe, right?
Okay.
So, for instance, if we go back to school, this is my favorite example of this. There you are, a little kid, and you've got to be the smartest. You've got to get the best grades. You should be the prettiest, the most athletic, the most popular, right?
Right.
Were you in that school?
Yeah.
Yeah. And at the same time, you must be completely modest, self-effacing, unaware of the fact that you are required to claw your way to the top of every pile that you can claw your way to the top of.
Right.
Right? So
Plus
it's the more
impossible standards.
Yeah, the whole thing is completely insane, and yet everybody got the same story.
Mm-hmm.
So if you use those judgments as a way of following them back to the beliefs and assumptions that are ruling your life, you'll get to see a couple of really interesting things. So can you, without being, you know, divulging anything too dangerous, can you give us a kind of an average judgment?
An average judgment. Well, for me now, what I've noticed is the judge inside me likes to judge other people for exhibiting what type sixes exhibit. That's its favorite thing. If they are showing safety issues or if they are showing anxiety of any type, it just seems to love that. So,
yeah. So then they are
ridiculous.
Yeah,
know.
They are the wrong, bad kind of people.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
So the voice in your head judges other people for that. Okay. So if
right.
you follow it back, you'll realize very quickly, of course, that it's not you. Okay? If it were you and judgment were such a negative thing, which it is, you'd stop doing it.
I know,
but you
right.
can't stop doing it, and that's our first big clue that it's not you.
Huh.
Okay? So you hear a voice in your head pointing this out. And then, of course, the quick follow-up is, once it's established that that makes a person the wrong person, then as soon as there's any evidence at all that you are the same way, you
mm-hmm.
are an easy target. So it's got you set up. It's got you positioned for the fall that it's going to provide for you.
Hmm. And I'm onto it. I'm definitely onto it somewhat because sometimes I feel like I get a message of, oh, you shouldn't go out in the world today, you know, because I'm going to judge, you know, I'm going to be up here judging all the people that you interact with today. And I think that's kind of interesting because every once in a while, I mentioned this in my last call, you know, egocentric karmic conditioning or sulfate will slip up that way.
Yes.
And say that, you know.
Yeah.
And
so you want a little exercise to do?
Oh, please.
Okay, so every time you hear the voices of judgment, instead of believing that it's you or that it has anything to do with you,
okay.
You can say, so you're projecting that he is blah, 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 whatever the voice just said.
Okay.
So I think that I will love him unconditionally. So I hear you projecting that she is blah, blah, blah. Well, I think a person like that really needs some kindness.
Wow. That's good.
Isn't it? Can you see them gnashing their nasty little teeth right now?
Well, what I love about that is, you know, I've been recording and listening for so long, and I've been recording these kinds of encouragements for when I see this sort of criticism of me, but I haven't when I see the judgment of others, you know, that particular technique. So I think I will record about that.
Good. Very good. And, of course, that can work well for you too, right? So
yes.
You can step back and say, wow, you're being really hard on her. I think we need to take special care of her.
Yeah. Okay.
Good.
Good exercise. I love it.
Yes. All right. Take care.
Oh, thank you, Sherry. Thank you, Michael. Good
you're
night.
Welcome.
You're welcome. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Carrie. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have another caller.
That's a good thing.
Hello.
Next caller. You are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Good evening, Sherry. This is Beth.
How are you, Beth?
I'm blue, literally.
You're blue?
I'm painting blue.
Do you feel like saying more about that?
It's trivial. It's nothing. I'm quite excited to hear all these Enneagram calls. I personally have found meditation, the Nothing Wrong With You workshop, and the Enneagram to be the most powerful self-revelators.
Yes. Yes. All of them pointing at personality. Karmically conditioned personality is just not who you are.
It's not who I am, and it's only like one thing that's available, and kind of like discovering that, you know, sometimes it might be actually kind of fun to be an eight.
Uh-huh. I can tell you it's fun to be an eight.
Yeah. For a six, not so much.
Yeah, I know. It's only not fun for other people.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
Yeah.
But I actually wanted to kind of look at, the recording and listening.
Yes. The most powerful tool I've found yet.
So far, it's still cooking the chickpea. It's painful.
Mm.
It's, I had a kind of like because I need it to be 100% completely honest. Otherwise, you know, I just don't believe it. Since I'm being a six.
Well, but you've got to question who you are.
Yeah.
Who said that? And then who's going to be held to that standard and who's going to listen? My God, if I have to be 100% honest and I'm going to look to conditioned mind to define what that is, I'm never going to hear a single kind word out of that recorder.
Yes. So far what I've noticed is that most of the recordings are about being safe. Are you still there?
Yeah. I'm
okay.
Just trying to picture what that's like. What does that sound like?
There's room in my lap for you. Everything's okay. It's not real. It's okay.
Okay.
Kind of all.
It's interesting to me. I'm just processing that because I wouldn't necessarily think that that had anything to do with safety.
Hmm. Okay.
I mean, since we're on the Enneagram, you know, that would not be my orientation to those words. If somebody said that to me, I would not interpret that as they are telling me I'm safe.
Wow. Okay.
Adequate.
Ah, yes, I don't believe I am.
Pardon me?
That's a big one that I go with every day.
Yeah, adequate but not safe because, of course, you know, I bet we could agree that there's no such thing as safety from a conditioned perspective.
Yes.
Right, we're all going to die and everything in the world is going to happen between now and then. So,
coming up is Dag Hammarskjöld's, you know, a true friend helps you risk yourself so that you can find the part that's not indestructible.
Yes.
It's only the destructible parts aren't real.
Yes.
So there's no need to be safe.
Right, right. I mean, it, yes, we're right there. There's safe from center and safe from a conditioned personality.
Ha.
And those are, I mean, that's the difference between the light room and the dark room.
Yes. Yes. I have all these problems that I want to get your advice on.
I can solve all of your problems in one sentence. I know what it is.
I'm willing.
Find center.
Ha.
Get thee to center.
Again and yet again.
Yes.
And sometimes, you know, it's like the same old way I've done it before doesn't work anymore.
That's right.
So finding it again and yet again.
Yeah, because we can't, karmic conditioning can't create a formula for center.
Nor, it's like, yes, yes. And it's like at 10 o'clock this morning, there was no center and no center possible. And at 8 o'clock at night, it's okay.
Yes. So, back to recording and listening, it's where we put our attention. If my attention is on, there is no center, there's no such thing as center, center isn't possible, then that's true. That is, in fact, what I get.
Ha. Yes.
But if my attention is on what I know to be true, whether I feel it right now or not, then what will happen to me is that my attention will take me to where I want to be.
Again and yet again.
Split second by split second.
I'm glad that there are so many recordings on the Open and Listening webpage.
Uh-huh.
Because it is second by second.
Yes, it is. Yeah. And that's why so karmic conditioning is always attempting to talk us into doing something else. And what we must do, is keep our attention where we want it.
Ah. Yes.
It's the only hope. It's the only thing that works. And there's so much conversation that is simply designed to keep us focused on something other than the simple truth of, I need to have my attention where I want my life to be.
It's an act of choice.
It's an act of choice. Yes.
Thank you, Sherry.
You are so very welcome.
Again and yet again.
Take good care of yourself. Again and yet again.
Again, okay.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Beth. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Thank you, Michael.
Sherry's been great.
Thanks. Talk to you soon.
Yeah, let's do it again.
All right. Sounds like a plan.
Okay.
Good night.
Care.